My name is Frank Guller. I'm a partner for automotive at Horvath. And driven by high tech, the automotive industry is undergoing the greatest transformation in its history. And I'm optimistic about the European industry to manage the change successfully, despite the huge challenges and the flood of bad news we currently see.
The Optimist. Conversations with leaders and industries shaping Europe's future. Exploring the ideas and innovations driving progress across the continent.
Welcome to The Optimist, presented to you by Tech by Handelsblatt. I'm Felix Zeltner, your host. I'm so excited that you're here, that you're listening, that you're joining us on this journey to Europe's leaders, to the people that shape this continent's future. And today we're getting behind the wheel and we're driving, a little detour. We're going into a place that's a little darker and had some rainy clouds and some thunderstorms lately and hasn't had a lot of optimism overall. The automotive industry. Our guest today, Frank Guller, is a partner at Horvath, a global management consultancy, and he has spent his life in and around this industry. Frank is based out of Stuttgart in Germany, where I would say the heart of the automotive industry beats strongly in this part of the world. And he is telling us that if this industry that has a lot of challenges right now is returning to its roots of innovation, of collaboration, of speed, and yes, of optimism, it will have a great future. And it is also because of us, the people who drive cars or buy cars. We are drastically changing the way we do this. And Frank is also optimistic about that. And we even talk about robo-taxis in the very end. Frank Guller, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
Frank, how are you?
Well, Felix, times are very challenging, or you could also say really crazy at the moment. The dynamic is extremely high. I see it day by day in our customer projects. But it's also extremely exciting at the moment with many fascinating technological innovations ahead. And I'm sure we will talk about this more in detail later on today.
Frank, you have dedicated your career, you can say, to the automotive industry. And you're now helping it transform. So you, just as everybody, is also reading the news, but you're looking at it from an insider perspective. And I want to go into optimist mode with you. I mean, that's the name of our podcast. But I would also not like to skip all the challenges, all the craziness that is happening right now. So can you just paint a picture for us? Where is the automotive industry in Europe at today when we're recording this episode?
Well, Felix, almost 13 million people work directly or indirectly in or for the automotive industry in Europe, which is about 7% of the employed population in Europe.
Wow.
So a crisis in automotive industry always has a significant impact on the economy in total. It affects not only car makers and parts suppliers, but also other sectors like mechanical engineering or many service providers along the entire supply chain. And there are several reasons, Felix, why the automotive industry is under pressure right now. Maybe I can give some examples for that. First of all, Felix, the technological transformation, it's driven by megatrends such as e-mobility, digitization of the car with more and more digital applications, or also highly automated driving systems. And therefore, the challenge is that huge financial investments in high tech and future car models are needed right now. And competition is quite tough. Currently, especially the Chinese competitors are ahead regarding e-mobility and connectivity. But in addition, and that makes it more complex, the market also has changed because after the corona crisis, demand was high and manufacturers were able to sell cars at high prices. But that has changed a lot in short time, and currently demand is rather low and prices are really under pressure. And overall, the car sales in Europe are still around 2 million vehicles below the level before the corona crisis. And at the same time, with regard to the global markets, Felix, sales in China, especially of German car makers, have come under pressure. And this is leading to significantly lower profits. And that's the reason why the cost pressure and the pressure for restructuring is so high. And let's say, what's the current situation of the European manufacturers? The cost base for European and especially the German manufacturers is simply too high, especially overhead cost, but also product cost. And in addition, we have the situation that there are significant overcapacities in the plants. So just to give you an example, in Germany, just 2/3 of the capacities of car manufacturers are right now utilized. And that overall makes it quite complex and challenging. So to summarize to your question, the combination of pressure to transform, so e-mobility and other technical trends, high material energy prices, new competitors, tariffs, and falling customer demands makes it overall quite challenging at the moment for the Europeans.
Thank you, Frank. I was actually taking notes here while you were speaking. And something you haven't mentioned is, of course, where I am, the United States of America, and all the craziness that's going on there. So just over the last few days, I mean, Frank, it's hard to record a podcast these days because in the US, things change in a matter of hours right now. But is there a challenge you want to add just when looking at the US?
Yes, Felix, definitely. Let's say the market conditions in the US are certainly difficult, and especially due to the new tariffs. But also on the US, I have a differentiated view.
Okay.
And it's always important to have, let's say, several perspectives in mind. It's to be expected that combustion cars will be preferred by many customers in the US also in the upcoming years. And that means and opens opportunities, especially for the Europeans and Germans in particular, because that's the technology where the Europeans are still leading in. And for sure, the US will also be a large market for e-mobility, no doubt about that. But for a longer time period, both technologies will definitely be more than relevant.
Okay.
And in addition, the local for local production, so in the US, for the US, will be a crucial factor in order to be close to the market, first of all, but also to avoid the tariffs. And just to give you some examples, BMW, for example, has manufacturing footprint in the US, and that's definitely an advantage. And also other manufacturers from Europe as well. And for example, Volkswagen is heavily investing in new corporations, for example, with the e-manufacturer Rivian. And that's due to be near to the market, for sure. But also from a Volkswagen perspective, especially to provide important impulses in the area of car software and network architecture. So overall, let's say, it will remain very exciting for the Europeans in the US, but there are still chances of playing a relevant role in the market also in the future, I'm convinced.
And if somebody who's listening was maybe blinking on the word Rivian here for a moment, so Rivian is, if I understand correctly, a automotive startup, you can still call them, out of California, and they sort of announced a joint venture, or Volkswagen announced a joint venture with Rivian in 2024, which is something that I think we haven't seen a lot of, a German car company and a US car startup going together and building this joint venture to manufacture new electronic vehicles. And it shows how much is changing. Now, Frank, you are an optimist. I mean, that's why you're on the podcast today. And with Horváth, the company that you're a part of, you are consulting for the automotive industry. But as I said in the beginning, you dedicated your career to it and you have worked both inside the automotive industry, and now you're working on or from the outside for the automotive industry. You have made the challenges now pretty clear, but what are you actually optimistic about with so many challenges flying around that we just talked about? Is it maybe even possible for you to paint a maybe more rosy picture for Europe when we look into the future of the automotive industry. So here's Frank the Optimist. The mic is yours.
Felix, I really believe in the strengths of a European automotive industry. And I think the automotive industry has already proven in the past to manage challenges and crises successfully. So, for example, the market collapse after Lehman crisis or the Corona crisis as well. And the product and market strategies of automotive companies in Europe have been defined for the future. And now it's, from my perception, all about execution. And that means especially the launches of new models of cars and the flood of product innovations of European car makers have just been started.
Okay.
In the next 5 years, many fascinating new models will be launched. Electric vehicles, but also great cars with combustion engines or plug-in hybrids. And for sure, it's not easy with regard to e-mobility, especially in Europe. But I'm convinced that the future of automotive will be predominantly electric, but the transition phase will be much longer than expected some years ago. And at the moment, we also see already some slightly positive signals for e-mobility in Europe. Just in the first 2 months of 2025, so in January and February, the sales of e-cars in Germany increased by 40% and in Europe in total by 30%. Well, to be honest, it was a low level last year, but we see there's something in motion. And however, overall demand of cars remains unfortunately weak at the present. But regarding e-mobility, there are some positive signals. And Felix, we discussed already about the cost pressure and the pressure for restructuring in the industry. And all companies in Germany and Europe are working on that topic quite hard. And the effects of the measures are quite hard and unfortunately lead to job cuts in many companies. That's unfortunately the case. However, the restructuring will lead to a significant reduction of costs, and stepwise, the companies will become more competitive again. So I would say a rosy future would be maybe too optimistic to say.
Okay.
But there's a realistic chance, Felix, for the automotive industry to stabilize in Europe. And I'm optimistic that many cars will continue to be produced in Europe and Germany. And Europe has different market situations. I'm convinced that Eastern Europe will be most likely a winner due to the lower wages. And we already see that many OEMs and suppliers are planning to expand further capacities to Eastern Europe or have already done. So to summarize, the lights will not go out in the majority of the production plants, but capacities will certainly be reduced overall.
Okay. So just a few weeks ago, our fellow German, Ursula von der Leyen, actually put out a sort of an amendment to these new CO2 emissions rules that are now really, really impacting a lot of organizations all over Europe because of the reporting and of the much stricter rules. And she basically said, well, the automotive industry, we have to give them some slack. We have to be a little more flexible when it comes to emissions because they have to stay competitive globally. I thought that was really interesting. Is that something that makes you optimistic also?
Yes, definitely. We see it on the European level, let's say, so within the European Union, but also with regard to politics in Germany. It's definitely, I'm convinced, understood that there has be something changed. And change means to do everything what helps the companies in Europe more competitive. And let's say to reduce wherever it's possible, the efforts for administration.
Mm. Okay. Well, Frank, that brings us, I think, a little bit to the meat of this podcast. This is not a CO2 friendly way to say it. But I think what you're really looking into every day working with automotive companies is innovation and technology. And I learned from you preparing for today's podcast that you yourself are driving an electric car, correct?
Yes, Felix, that's right. I drive an electric car from a German premium brand. and I'm quite satisfied so far.
A German premium brand. Okay. You're not sharing the exact name and model of the car?
No problem. That's an Audi e-tron GT.
Interesting. Okay. I haven't driven that yet, but I would say you are making an optimistic move by driving that kind of car because you're saying this is the future. And I, though, from my personal experience as having grown up in Germany and having driven my own cars when I, you know, got my license and went through these cycles of innovation myself before moving to the US, there are still so many misunderstandings about e-mobility. So many people are still doubtful of the range of these vehicles and how much they cost and what it means to charge them at home or not and how it looks like with the taxes. So what do you say to the people that have all these misunderstandings? What are the main misunderstandings that we can clear out today on the podcast?
Well, Felix, I have the experience now with about more than 70,000 kilometers with my own car, and I just can say it's real fun. The acceleration of electric cars are sensational, and for me personally, it's really driving experience day by day. For sure, the real range of about 350 kilometers at the moment is certainly a little short, but if we are honest, that is perfectly sufficient for most everyday driving already now. And for long distances, I have to plan better for recharging the car. That's definitely the case. But here again, my personal view as an optimist, a short break of 50 minutes for a coffee while charging my car helps also me personally to slow down a little bit. And often I really enjoy it. And maybe one point in addition, the charging infrastructure is often discussed in Europe, in Germany, most likely also in the US, as I know it. Mm-hmm. But the charging infrastructure is better than its reputation, especially in Germany. Normally, you can find a high-performance charger within the next 15 to 20 kilometers without waiting times. And of course, I have also had the case that the charging station was defective, and that can be really annoying. But in my experience, that rarely occurs. And therefore, I'm optimistic on electromobility from my personal experience. But we also see some movements in how the customers look at e-mobility. So we definitely see that the openness to battery electric vehicles is growing in Europe. So almost two-thirds of respondents of a latest Horvath custom market study can imagine buying a battery electric vehicle. And minimum as interesting as the fact already mentioned is that the absolute rejection of BEVs in Europe has fallen from 40% to 20%. That's really a big difference compared to the study 1 year ago. And, you know, I like facts and figures and therefore give you an additional example. Already today, the BEV 2.0 models, so the models now coming to the market, meet expectations regarding range and charging speed much better. And more cars are in the so-called sweet spot of customer expectations. So the sweet spot between expectation to charging speed and range.
Okay.
And if I have a look to the planned models coming to the market, Felix, the range will definitely no longer be an issue in 3 to 5 years because new e-models will have significantly higher ranges, minimum 500 to 700 kilometers and more.
Wow.
And also, that's, let's say, the big challenge, prices also will decline stepwise.
Interesting. Okay. That sounds very optimistic. And I feel like the e-mobility part, you have painted a clear picture of new models being worked on, range significantly going up, price going down, the comfort of driving that you experience yourself every day, certainly being a huge upsell once people experience this themselves, that they don't want to go back. Now, let's jump to the next a maybe optimistic topic, which is automated driving. I was just a few weeks ago in Austin, in Texas, for the South by Southwest conference, this huge innovation festival, where you oftentimes see new technology being, you know, rolled out. So I saw e-scooters there for the first time, or even years earlier, I saw Uber and Lyft rolling out there for the first time because you have so many early adopters and you can basically test out new technology. This time, I saw self-driving taxis for the first time in my life. They had already, of course, been rolled out in California before in some places. But now it was me for the first time seeing people getting into these cars that are stacked with spinning cameras that I only knew from these cars that do Google Maps recording so far. And these spinning camera cars were just driving around Austin all the time. And then I saw a group of passerbys at one crossing and a group of people just looking at them. And one of them, a woman, just shouted out, "This is so creepy," which I somewhat agreed on. I mean, it's weird looking at a car that looks back at you with, you know, so many cameras. It looks like it's a spying vehicle that just, you know, films everything and is going around the city all the time and you don't know what's happening. But here in the US, this is reality. You can use them, you can be a subscriber, and it's being rolled out. So why are you optimistic, Frank, that Europe, with all its rules and regulations on privacy that we all cherish, I think at this point more than ever, can actually catch up here?
Well, from my point of view, what is technically feasible has always prevailed in history. And that's one of the main arguments why I'm really convinced. And also in Europe, self-driving taxis and autonomous driving will be in the future more than relevant. But however, it will take some time before fully autonomous driving will seen to a large extent on the streets in Europe. Probably it will be well after 2030 or most likely more 2035. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned it already, in Europe in particular, many legal issues still need to be clarified. But, well, I'm an optimist. It's not easy to solve, but I'm pretty optimistic it will be solved because the market is so huge and the technology is really fascinating. Robotaxis are a game changer, especially in the cities, you mentioned it already, and it will be a very flexible, affordable, and most likely also a cheap option of mobility. And you asked me with regard to Europe, it's estimated that it has a market potential in Europe of an amount in double-digit billion. So it's really huge. We will see what happens, but definitely it's interesting. And even if companies from China and the US currently have the more offensive strategies, also the European tech players in automotive are investing in that technology. And what's pretty interesting is it opens up different business model opportunities. For sure, the production of the hardware, so the car and the autonomous driving systems, but also the operation of the robotaxi fleets. So in the end, core competences like order processing till maintenance are needed. So completely different competences compared to what's normally the core of an automotive company. So in the end, I'm convinced most customers will prefer a flexible mix of mobility. So using robotaxis, but also public transport. But I'm also convinced that many people will also still have their own car. So it doesn't mean that there's no market for individual mobility.
And you just painted a fascinating picture. Let's say it's 2035, and you said, we don't know if at this point, when we will have a lot more automation on our roads and a lot more self-driving cars, we don't know whether it's going to be the BMWs of this world or maybe the Sixths and Hertzes of this world who will actually manage a lot of the cars that are driving around. I thought that was such a fascinating picture. Could you even see a car rental company or a car producing company being entirely automated, basically run by an AI at some point?
Well, AI will play definitely a significant role in most areas of the companies. So on the production, logistics, and many more. And digitization and AI are among the top priorities of management. But at the same time, as we see it today, just 40% of the automotive companies stated in our last study that they are regarding AI at the beginning in terms of maturity. But, and that's again what I really see, what's optimistic. They really speed up right now, and the development steps in AI are enormous. That was also evident, for example, at the recent Hannover Messe, where AI was the number one topic. Many innovations were presented, and especially new AI applications for production and supply chain. For example, AI agents for factories. And AI accelerate automotive factories and will help to realize efficiency increase. Especially in the areas of production is high potential, and especially in the indirect areas. So expert estimations show, Felix, that, for example, in technical operational production planning, up to 70% could be automated, or work preparation and production estimations say about 50 to 60%. So that really shows the potential. Quite interesting example, in addition, if it's fine for you to tell you, is AI-based sales forecasting. It's a very important example, because the question is, how can tipping points in the market be recognized earlier? So supply chains are complex, and bottlenecks in supply chains of materials occur increasingly often. And it's so crucial to anticipate volume changes in an early stage in order to, on the one hand, ensure to avoid building up stocks, and on the other hand, be able to deliver. And recognizing a tipping point for volume changes just for 1, 2, or 3 days in the end has a significant impact on costs and EBIT. And at one of our Howard customers, the manual forecasts and the machine learning-based forecasts were carried out in parallel for a longer period of time.
Interesting.
And the interesting thing is that the AI-based forecast was more accurate, though that shows the potential behind. So AI is going to be an important part of daily business, but manufacturers won't be entirely run by AI only. In the end, it's a combination of human intelligence, creativity, motivation that will always be also of great importance and will make the difference in companies beside AI and technology. It's both what's needed.
Mm-hmm. What I hear from you also is, when we talk about the human factor, is that we will look into the future of production, is that there will be less humans involved in making a car, and maybe more humans involved in orchestrating robots, working with AI agents to reach many, many customers at the same time. So there's a huge change in the middle part of car companies, and also the production part of companies, that is fascinating to talk about. And it all brings me back to the human factor here, because you work with leaders in automotive day by day. Is that fair to say, Frank?
That's right. I'm in close contact to top executives of the industry day by day, and that for many years.
Do you have a favorite challenging question that you ask automotive leaders these days when you step into their office or on a call with them?
Well, I often ask them, what are currently top line and bottom line the topics having the main focus on the daily agenda of board meetings? And out of that, I often receive really quite interesting answers.
Okay. Can you give me an example?
Yes. Maybe just give you 2 or 3 examples from the past, what really impressed me. Starting with the CFO of an automotive supplier. We know the suppliers especially are really under pressure. And industry has always been very cost sensitive. But he would never have imagined that the cost pressure would rise again in such an extent. And therefore, the reduction of costs is a top priority on the bottom line for that company. Or let me think about a second example. It's incredible how unstable global supply chains have become in the last years. And a board member of a car maker once told me that he has never had comparable situation in his entire career before. There had always been, for sure, bottlenecks sometimes in supply of materials, but not with that frequency. And a wide range of reasons for it. It's lack of material, unstable processes, but especially uncertainties due to wars. Some logistical routes become more and more difficult or maybe partly insecure. So many different reasons why supply chain is really a top focus to manage in order to be able to produce. For sure, that's always the core for manufacturer to be able to produce and deliver the products to customers. And let me give one last example. A CEO of a family-owned automotive supplier explained me, for him, the main focus top line is not on the next 1 or 2 years, but it's more on the next 5 to 10 years and beyond, because the priority is given long-term sustainable corporate development over decades in that companies, not just short-term profitability. So we see how different the situations and sometimes also strategies are in the industry.
So would you recommend to leaders to be like that, to be a lot more, let's say, to become maybe futurists or foresight practitioners a lot more and look beyond the next shareholder meeting, beyond the next quarter, and really try to have these outlooks over 5 to 10 years that we talked about today on the podcast? Is that what you recommend to them? Which seems to be incredibly difficult, but maybe also much more optimistic than the current moment.
Felix, it depends on the specific situation of the companies. For sure, it's a big difference whether you are on stock listed or whether you are a family-owned company. But I'm really convinced that sometimes it helps not only to have the focus on the next 2, 3, 4 years, because innovation takes much more time. And we see it, for example, in China. What happens in China, Felix, is in the end the result of a master plan, because the Chinese decided already years ago that they will step in e-mobility, and that plan is now executed day by day.
Interesting. I'm so excited, Frank, that you're taking the time to talk to us, and you really make us more optimistic about this industry that's being challenged so much at the moment. Do you sometimes wake up at night and think, where's this all going? Are you nervous about what's happening right now? Or are you such an optimist through and through that you go out every day and go to your meetings and go into your daily work and you're just telling people it's all going to be fine? Like, how do you personally deal with this moment?
Well, Felix, it's quite tough at the moment. I showed you some examples talking to top executives, and it's more than frustrating sometimes, because for sure the strategies are not implemented as fast as planned, and that we see it day by day. And it's for sure not easy to see that definitely the industry is not competitive, especially in the middle of Europe, as it was before. So that's for sure hard. But my mindset is always to have a look ahead and also see the chances. And definitely there are opportunities. And if I see why the automotive industry, and especially the manufacturing industry in total, was so successful, it's always really looking forward to be creative, to be forward-looking, and they just make things done. And that's my personal mindset. And also the mindset I see at many of our clients as well.
Maybe the automotive industry in Europe is maybe kind of returning to its roots right now. While it has been sitting on its legacy for a long time and just riding the waves of success out, it is coming back to its roots that made it so successful in the first place, and is really maybe becoming an innovative world-leading industry again, because it has to.
Well, Felix, it has to be the ambition. First of all, And I'm optimistic that it is possible to stay a relevant player worldwide. That won't be easy, but it's definitely possible. Can I tell you just one story? Because that's, let's say, out of my daily business in the last couple of weeks. Just some days ago, Felix, I joined the new Battery World in Munich. It's a leading event for the future of electromobility, where high-tech companies presented innovations, particularly in battery technology. I was really impressed how many high-tech companies have managed to transfer their core competences to new fields of application. And that's based on innovation and creativity. Just to mention some examples, Tesa, the company is well known from its tapes in offices and homes. And Tesa has taken its core competence and developed highly innovative bonding processes for the production of battery cells. Or another example is Zeiss. Zeiss has the core competence in optical systems and now offers highly innovative solutions for battery cell testing to detect the finest particles to avoid quality problems. So these are impressive examples where collaboration beyond sectors is already implemented. And also impressive, PowerCo, that's the battery cell manufacturer of Volkswagen, will start the production in the Salzgitter Gigafactory this year. It's also an important signal to the automotive industry in Europe.
Frank, to close us out here, I would like to ask you one last question, because you're a passionate driver yourself, and you already shared with us that you are really enjoying your e-vehicle. If you think, let's say 5 years into the future, and just take us through what you hope to happen when you leave your house in the morning and you get into your car and start driving.
Yes, definitely it is. So Felix, the house of mine and my family is next to Stuttgart. It's about 15 kilometers away. So it's not really an urban environment, but it's next to Stuttgart. So I will start my journey at home with my car. It will definitely be an electric car, most likely not an autonomous one so far.
Okay.
And then I drive to the office of Horvath in the city of Stuttgart, or if I have to travel longer distances, maybe to the main station and then take the train, or to the airport and take, for example, an airplane. I'm really curious and hope it happens when we see the first robo-taxi fleets already, maybe in, let's say, the starting phase in Stuttgart. Mm-hmm. And then I'm quite curious to go out of the office of Horvath and take a robo-taxi and drive then flexible within the city to the next meeting or whatsoever. So that's my vision with regard to the next 5 years. It's not clear whether especially the robo-taxi topic will already be available in 5 years, but nevertheless, it's a vision. And maybe 3 years later, when it will be a little bit later, it will be also quite interesting.
I love this very German image that you just gave us, that you might take a robo-taxi from meeting to meeting in Stuttgart, but your morning commute, you still want to drive yourself. Frank, I'm so grateful that you were here today, and see you in Heilbronn. Looking forward.
Felix, thanks for having me. It was a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The Optimist. For more insights and updates about tech, visit us at tech-europe.org. The Optimist is produced by Tech by Handelsblatt. Music by Christian Heinemann. Stay curious.